The U.S. Supreme Court has decided a pair of cases challenging partisan gerrymandering that have big implications for Wisconsin.
In a 5-4 ruling, the court decided to uphold maps that were challenged for being too partisan and favoring one party over the other. In the majority decision, justices argued the issue was not one the courts should weigh in on.
J.R. Ross is the editor of WisPolitics, and he joins us now to talk about what the ruling means for Wisconsin. J.R., welcome back to the show.
How are you doing today?
Good. Well, start by telling us a little bit more about what the majority decided today.
Essentially, the majority is saying there is no place for the courts, federal courts, to step in and say that map drawn by that legislature is too partisan to stand the constitutional muster. It basically leaves it all to lawmakers and governors in these states to draw these maps, except for those that have like a independent commission, and just says the courts have no role in doing this. Now, to critics, that means you're opening the door to the most extreme partisan gerrymanders that these guys can think up, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, because they now have carte blanche to act without any worries about the court stepping in and saying, no, that's one step too far.
So we had that prominent Wisconsin lawsuit up against the Supreme Court. At this point, with this ruling, there's no other legal recourse at this point, is there?
No, and I talked to the attorney for those who had filed the lawsuit today. He said he had been contacted by the attorneys for the Republican lawmakers about basically filing a joint motion to dismiss the suit, which he was going through all the 36 plaintiffs to make sure they're okay with that, because the reality is there's no place for this decision to go. There was a trial scheduled for July on the Wisconsin case only if the Supreme Court kept the door open for these kind of challenges. Now that door's been closed, what would you argue? It's basically the exact same argument we saw in the Maryland and North Carolina cases the court ruled on today, and that is the plaintiffs had argued in the Wisconsin case they have this new standard. They have a way to measure a partisan gerrymander that they said could be used by courts, but the court today in D.C. said no, that there's just no standard we can use that we're comfortable with.
So for advocates who wanted to see a change, who really wanted to see the Supreme Court do something about this, what options do they have at this point?
Well, in other states, you know, they've gone to referendums to create new independent commissions, you know. We don't have that option in Wisconsin. So your option, if you're a Democrat or somebody looking to change this, is to win more elections. Well, the problem for Democrats is they have a map in their minds that's stacked against them. So what do you do? Well, we will have a new map drawn after the 2020 census. That'll take place sometime in 2021. What's going to be different from last time is that the court's probably going to draw it. Now, I mean, there is a small, and I mean small, chance that Republican lawmakers and Governor Tony Evers can agree on a map, but I don't see that happening, neither anybody else I talked to. So in years past, we've had split control of government. The courts have drawn the maps. So what's going to be interesting to watch in 2021 is, will it be our state Supreme Court, which is going to have a conservative majority in 2021, or will it be the federal courts, where we've already seen a 3-judge panel in Wisconsin, you know, overturn the assembly lines were drawn last time. So that's what to watch. What court decides the map in 2021, again, barring the minor miracle of Republican lawmakers and the Democratic governor agreeing on new lines.
And briefly, JR, as we wrap up, what kind of reaction have you heard from officials and policymakers from around the state to today's decision?
Oh, Republicans are hailing this as, you know, that this whole lawsuit has been a waste of taxpayer resources and this upholds the maps that they knew it the entire time. Dems have bemoaned that this is a kind of a knock for democracy in general. It's going to make it harder because now you're having lawmakers pick who they represent versus voters picking who represents them. So, you know, it's the stuff we've heard before, but this is definitely a blow for Democrats in Wisconsin who are hoping for new maps in 2020 to have a better shot of picking up seats in legislature.
Well, JR, thank you so much for joining us today.
Anytime. Take care.
That was J.R. Ross of the website WisPolitics. He was with us to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court decision this morning, ruling 5-4 against opponents of partisan gerrymandering and effectively ending legal challenges to district maps, like the one in Wisconsin, on those grounds. We'll have more analysis of this decision and more tomorrow at 3:30.
Moving on, after some twists and turns this week, Congress has passed a humanitarian aid package to deal with the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border.
Both the House and Senate had passed plans earlier this week to spend about the same amount of money, but the initial House version had some more limits on how it could be used, along with some policy changes. Now, after pressure from moderate House Democrats, they've passed the Senate's version of the plan.
The issue picked up urgency this week with an Associated Press photo. It shows the bodies of a man, Oscar Alberto Martinez Ramirez, and his 23-month-old daughter, Valeria, who drowned in the Rio Grande trying to enter the U.S.
Yesterday, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, who chairs the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, said the time to act is now.
I realize tragedies occur all over this country, all over the world. I don't want to see another picture like that on the U.S. border. I hope that picture alone will catalyze this Congress, this Senate, this committee to do something.
Abigail Hausloner joins us now to talk about this story. She's an immigration reporter with The Washington Post. Abigail, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So it's been kind of a wild week in Congress with this story. Bring us to the latest news with what happened today. House Democrats voting in favor of supporting that Senate plan. What happened today?
Well, as you mentioned, the House passed essentially the same bill as the Senate had already passed. Yesterday, it's a $4.6 billion spending package, and it will basically pour all these funds into these Department of Homeland Security and Department of Health and Human Services agencies that are dealing with this crisis on the border. And they did it to essentially, try to alleviate what these agencies are saying is a major crisis that they're at capacity, that they cannot deal with the influx of the almost unprecedented influx of families and children, largely from Central America, who are coming across and are being apprehended. And as you mentioned, this was sort of all over the place this week. That's because the Senate passed a bill, a bipartisan bill that the White House supported to push all this cash into these agencies. And the House Democrats really wanted to insert a bunch of provisions into the bill that would basically try to set up more protections for migrant children in custody and bring a little more accountability, in their view, to these agencies who are detaining them. The House did pass that bill narrowly. It was largely along party lines, and then they scrapped it today to pass the Senate bill in order, how Democratic moderates said to, just get those funds out there. And there were a lot of liberals, obviously, who were not pleased with that.
How much pressure was there on Congress to pass one bill or another?
Well, there's been a lot of pressure. I mean, certainly from these agencies, and there's been some really startling images and reports this past week and the week before. As you mentioned, as you heard from Senator Johnson during that hearing, there's this photo that lawmakers have been invoking. I think everyone's seen it. This very really harrowing photo of a father and his 2-year-old daughter from El Salvador who drowned trying to cross the river. And several, lawmakers have said this. They don't want to see a photo like this. You've heard lawmakers on both sides of the aisle saying, "Okay, we need to do something. This photo really epitomizes this crisis." And at the same time, we've been hearing from lawyers who have gotten access to Border Patrol facilities, most notably one recently in Texas, where Border Patrol has been holding hundreds of children, some of them very young, without their parents, in pretty squalid conditions, according to the lawyers. And so that also really galvanized people on both sides of the aisle saying, okay, we need to do something. This is not sustainable. Children cannot be held this way. And obviously, though, there were party divisions over, what to do next and how to solve this problem.
Yeah, and what have we been hearing from Democrats so far? I would imagine that Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi was sort of in this unenviable situation where you've got kind of two wings of the party wanting two different things. What kind of things are we hearing from Democrats reacting to the passage of this?
Well, I think you have a lot of very liberal Democrats, on the left who are saying, no, we should not have settled for the Senate bill, which, ultimately does not include what House Democrats wanted, which was, provisions that would, for example, limit children's stays in some of these children's shelters to no more than 90 days, you know, before they're reunited with a family member. They wanted Customs and Border Protection to set up these new health and safety standards, you know, after learning that there are, you know, children in custody who don't have access to soap, potentially, who, you know, are really dirty, who aren't getting cared for, who are the, you know, little kids dependent on slightly older kids to take care of them. You know, they felt like there needed to be provisions in this bill to make sure they felt that this money was being spent in an appropriate way and that there would be more accountability. Ultimately, they gave in to having just this broad spending package. And as you said, Nancy Pelosi probably was not in this in an enviable position having to sort of mediate between moderates and liberals in the party to ultimately get this bill through.
We're talking with Abigail Hauslohner. She's an immigration reporter with The Washington Post, and we are talking about the humanitarian aid package passed by now by both the House and the Senate, the House opting to go with the Senate's plan, which had fewer provisions into oversight and other things like that. And Abigail, one of the other things I think was the difference between the House version of the plan and the Senate version of the plan was how much advance notice agencies down there would need to have if, let's say, a lawmaker wanted to come and visit and see the conditions at one of these facilities. Can you talk about what the difference was there between those two plans?
Right. Well, lawmakers, journalists, lawyers to some extent as well, people have complained about a real lack of transparency. That's been part of one of the big issues here. It's been very difficult, not just for journalists, but lawmakers, as you mentioned, to get information, you know, to get access to Border Patrol facilities and Health and Human Services facilities to actually see the conditions that children are being held in and adults. And so that was a major issue. Lawmakers want to be able to hold these agencies accountable. Democrats want to be able to get down there to the border and walk into these facilities and see for themselves. I think there was a lot of frustration, you know, that people were hearing. For example, we all learned of the situation in this facility in Clint, Texas, from a handful of lawyers who visited as monitors and interviewed the children. Otherwise, you know, critics are saying we might not have known for weeks, months.
One of the things that I think I remember reading about the differences between the House and the initial Senate version was that with the Senate plan, there was going to be money set aside going towards the military. Was there some concern from House Democrats over how that funding might actually be used?
Right. Well, some there has been talk and there are plans to set up new shelters, basically expand the bed space for child migrants in detention on military bases. You know, that's not unprecedented. That's been done in the past, certainly under the Obama administration as well. But, you know, Democrats in Congress are certainly very wary of how that money is being used. They don't want to further sort of get the military involved. They don't want to expand the detention space and or thereby the detention of minors and others who ultimately they think should not be in custody.
We're talking about the border aid package that passed the Senate and the House with Abigail Hauslohner. She covers immigration for The Washington Post.
You can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. Let us know what you think about the situation on the southern border. What do you make of the drama that unfolded in Congress this week over the humanitarian aid package? What kind of aid do you think should have gone to the border? What do you think the Trump administration should do to mitigate the crisis? Call 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org.
We'll continue this conversation in just a moment here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Chris Molina.
And I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we continue our conversation about the humanitarian crisis on the U.S.-Mexico border and the aid package that Congress just passed to address it. Abigail Hauslohner is our guest. She's an immigration reporter with The Washington Post.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about how Congress handled the emergency aid situation? What questions do you have about what's in the legislation? And how would you like to see immigration immigration tackled going forward. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. And we are going to go to the phones now. We've got Brenda, who's with us in Spring Green. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I'm trying to talk about a more holistic and kind of going forward idea. I'm just not certain why this package or any of the conversations that I'm privy to or understanding why the communities in Wisconsin and across the country are looking for workers. We are desperate in our town to have people here to do the jobs. Businesses have to close on days of business because we can't find workers, and why this is not attached to this idea of the immigration issue that's happening when people are desperate to come for work. And I just never hear that conversation in any of these discussions in the legislative level.
Brenda, thank you so much for that call. And Brenda's saying there needs to be, in any bill, some kind of road for citizenship. And that's something that some Democrats have wanted for a long time. In an emergency aid bill, there may not have been time for that. But how do you see Democrats latching onto this idea of a road to citizenship as part of a broader reform package, Abigail?
Well, that's certainly something. I mean, there are, what Brenda mentioned, obviously, is there are lots of facets to this major ongoing debate about immigration reform. One of them is, you know, worker visas that would bring in temporary workers for seasonal jobs on farms and factories and so on, as well as, you know, more permanent workers, more immigrants. The administration has tried to sort of really limit the flow of immigrants and has proposed measures that would fundamentally alter, you know, what types of immigrants are allowed in. Now, that's somewhat separate from what's going, although, you know, somewhat separate from the what's being debated and the bill that was passed in regards to the border. This bill that was just passed that the president is likely to sign deals pretty exclusively with a humanitarian crisis and sort of a logistical crisis that a group of government agencies are facing in trying to deal with hundreds of thousands of mostly Central American migrants coming across the border and detaining them and putting them through the system and trying to figure out what to do with them. Now, obviously, a lot of those people, you know, are coming for, presumably, most of those migrants are coming for in search of a better life. A lot of people are fleeing violence or they're fleeing poverty. And, you know, jobs in the United States are certainly, I think, one of the appeals. Certainly Republicans would say so. I'm certain many of the migrants would, too. But as Brenda's probably aware, jobs and the idea of immigrants being competition to native-born Americans for jobs is part of the debate. It's certainly one of the Republican talking points. One of the Republican arguments is that, well, Americans should be getting these jobs. And so that's also another reason why immigrants should not be allowed in. And in terms of those coming across the southern border, what we're dealing with is, you know, a crisis of, as the government says, unauthorized immigration. These are people who are claiming asylum, these are people who are crossing the border illegally, being apprehended by Border Patrol, often claiming asylum. It's not the same thing as folks who are applying for work visas.
Brenda, thank you so much for that call. Abigail, what has President Trump said about everything that's happened this week with the humanitarian aid bills, the competing bills that were making their way through Congress?
Well, Trump has, you know, the White House has supported, you know, supports the Senate bill. Now that it's been passed by the House, he's expected to sign it. He has commented briefly on the situation on the border and says, you know, has echoed other officials saying, you know, it's not good. He doesn't, it needs to be fixed, but has also cast blame on to Democrats for holding up the process and for creating the crisis by not agreeing or going along with efforts, his administration's efforts towards immigration reform. He also said earlier this week that even though the crisis is bad, it was still worse under President Obama.
And briefly, as we begin to wrap up, Abigail, we've got the second of two Democratic presidential debates tonight. Do you expect that this is going to be a hot topic of discussion when those 10 candidates take the stage?
I think if last night was any indicator, it certainly will be. Immigration is, you know, it took center stage last night. With Joaquin Castro, you know, basically challenging other candidates to weigh in on his sort of radical proposal to eliminate the criminality of crossing the border as a non-citizen. And I would imagine that the candidates are going to get some very pointed questions on that tonight as well.
Well, Abigail, thank you so much for joining us today and bringing us up to speed.
My pleasure.
Abigail Hauslohner is an immigration reporter with The Washington Post, and we talked with her about the border aid package that passed Congress just this afternoon to address the humanitarian crisis at the southern border. It now heads to President Trump's desk.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll talk summer vegetables, from tomatoes, zucchini, and everything in between. It's Food Friday on Central Time.
We'll recap both the Democratic presidential debates. We had one last night. We're going to have another one tonight. And we'll hear what the candidates had to say on issues such as climate change, gun control, immigration, and much more.
And, of course, we'll take a closer look at today's two big rulings from the Supreme Court on gerrymandering and a citizenship census question. That's coming up tomorrow right here on Central Time.
And plenty of time to share your opinion. Just send us a tweet at Central Time WPR.